This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of September 9th, 2018. Welcome, I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, regular features like the Is It Just Me commentary, Around the Rim, news from around the Pacific Rim, Cascadia Calling, news from around the Pacific Northwest, The Big Deal feature, catching up with Patrick Condon, the University of British Columbia professor of urban design. He had to pull out of the race to become Vancouver's next mayor, but he is still involved in Cope's campaign and has plenty to say about the high cost of housing and the high cost of transportation in Vancouver. And I will award a virtual Nanaimo bar to those who deserve it. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or did the NDP government do a real half-assed job of campaign finance reform in British Columbia? After Premier John Horgan came to power, the government banned big money last year, but in name only. Yes, corporations and unions cannot donate anymore, and that's a good thing. But the CEOs and the union bosses can under their own names. So what's to stop them from reimbursing each other, or their employees, or their relatives, from donating up to the $1,200 individual cap? That's what happened in Quebec, but the government there now requires donors to disclose where they work. Municipal parties in BC scrambled last fall to fill their bank accounts before the law changed. It is a law that includes loopholes that are big enough to sail the CBUS through. Parties can raise money from anywhere for operations in non-election years. During an election year, there is no limit on spending before the campaign period begins. In 2018, it officially begins September 22nd. And that's why there is a pro-Hector Bremner campaign on Facebook and on billboards around Vancouver, and Elections BC says it cannot do anything about it for now. The Bremner for Mayor campaign told the Georgia Strait that it does not know who is behind the giant images of Bremner's face and his Fix Housing slogan on billboards. Now, I've heard plenty of baloney covering politics over the last 3 decades, and that has to be near the top of the heap. The heap of bovine excrement. Despite all that, it might just work for Bremner. He got onto city council because of low voter turnout in last fall's by-election and a split among left-wing parties. Well, low voter turnout could be a storyline on October 20th, and there is a developing split among the right-wing parties. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim, headlines around the Pacific Rim. In the South China Morning Post, Sarah Zheng reports, China and America could be heading to a new Cold War, Stephen Roach warns. The former chairman of Morgan Stanley Asia said the next round of tariffs that U.S. President Donald Trump has threatened to levy on more than $200 billion U.S. dollars of Chinese goods would be another significant escalation of the dispute, which could lead to a protracted, bitter battle. Quote, what does the U.S. do if China's not going to back down? It doesn't have a plan B, Roach said on the sidelines of the American Chamber of Commerce annual conference in Hong Kong. Quote, it could be a new Cold War because the U.S. is after containing the biggest threat that it faces as a global power, which is China, said Roach, now a senior fellow at Yale University. Trade talks have stalled in recent weeks because the world's two largest economies, with billions in duties already enacted on both sides, and the possibility of Washington imposing additional tariffs as early as this week. The Trump administration has accused Beijing of engaging in unfair trade and intellectual property practices, in particular assailing the Made in China 2025 industrial policy designed to leapfrog Beijing from a manufacturing to an innovation powerhouse. ESPN's Jacob Wolf reports that Activision Blizzard sold slots in the Activision Blizzard Overwatch video game league to Chengdu, China, and Vancouver. Chengdu's team will be owned by Huya, a popular Chinese streaming platform which is part-owned by Chinese megacorp Tencent. In Vancouver, the owner of the Canucks and Rogers Arena, Aquilini Investment Group is the Overwatch franchisee. Rogers Arena hosted the Dota 2 International Tournament in August. The price for teams is estimated at between $35 million and $60 million. Also this week, Chris Overholt quit as the CEO of the Canadian Olympic Committee to become CEO of the Toronto Overwatch franchise. Robin Brudner is the interim head of the COC. And in the Los Angeles Times, Seema Mehta, Ryan Menezes, and Malay Moore report how eight elite San Francisco families funded Gavin Newsom's political ascent. The former San Francisco mayor is running for governor of California. A Times review of campaign finance records identified eight of San Francisco's best-known families as being among Newsom's most loyal and long-term contributors. Among those patrons are the Gettys, the Pritzkers, and the Fishers, whose families made their respective fortunes in oil, hotels, and fashion. They first backed him when he was a restaurateur and winery owner running for county supervisor in 1998 and have continued their support through the governor's race. They are not Newsom's largest donors. The families in total have given about $2 million of the $61 million that donors have contributed to his campaigns and independent committees backing those bids. But they gave while he was a relative unknown, providing crucial support to a political newcomer in the years before his campaign accounts piled high with cash from labor unions, Hollywood honchos, tech billionaires, and donors up and down the state. Those donors are mostly liberal, inspired by Newsom's history as an early supporter of progressive causes, including same-sex marriage, as San Francisco mayor in 2004. But some are Republicans, including President Trump's new ambassador to Austria, who are drawn by Newsom's background as a small businessman. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest. In the Tri-City Herald, Annette Carey reports, Tri-City swindler admits to using dead baby's identity to apply for a passport. A serial swindler who stole millions of dollars from investors in his Pasco company pleaded guilty September 6th to new crimes of aggravated identity theft and making a false statement. Michael Peter Spitzauer is facing up to 2.5 years in federal prison after admitting to using the birth certificate of a dead baby to apply for a U.S. passport. And a federal judge could add another 6 months to a year because the new crimes constitute a probation violation on an earlier prison sentence related to his company, Green Power, of Pasco. At the time, he admitted to defrauding investors, spending their money to pay back previous investors, and on a $1 million Kennewick mansion, furniture, donations, and professional sports tickets. Spitzauer also was required to pay nearly $13 million to investors in his company, Green Power, which he told investors in the U.S. and worldwide that he founded to convert municipal waste to biofuel. At one time, he also announced plans to build an $82 million plant in Fife inside the Puyallup Tribal Reservation to convert waste to diesel. That project was never built. In the Oregonian, Kaepernick watched Nike ads TV premiere during NFL opener from Beaverton headquarters. Colin Kaepernick, the former NFL quarterback known for starting protests over police brutality and racial inequality, watched the first television airing of a Nike ad featuring his likeness and voice from the apparel giant's Beaverton headquarters on Thursday, according to the Associated Press. The ad aired in the third quarter of the Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles win over the Atlanta Falcons. The 30th anniversary campaign of Nike's Just Do It slogan features Kaepernick, who believes he was blacklisted by NFL owners for protesting the national anthem and is suing them for collusion. For a company known for outrageous, funny, and even inspiring advertisements, the new campaign has put Nike in an unprecedented position, effectively picking a fight with a sitting president and his millions of supporters. And in The Breaker this week, I reported that Mike Gagan launched his campaign to defeat Victoria Mayor Lisa Helps in the October 20th civic election. The pro-development lobbyist would take the John A. McDonald statue that Helps put into storage and display it at the legislature, the Empress Hotel grounds, or Beacon Hill Park, along with a statue of Port Alberni-born ex-Prime Minister Kim Campbell. Meanwhile, in Vancouver, Main Street Research did a robocall poll on September the 5th that included notable omissions. There was no mention of left-wing parties Cope or One City, and no mention of right-wing mayoral candidate Fred Harding of the Vancouver First Party.
Apart from your vote for mayor, which municipal party do you support? Press 1 for Yes Vancouver. Press 2 for Vision Vancouver. Press 3 for the Nonpartisan Association, or NPA. Press 4 for the Greens. Press 5 for Pro Vancouver. Press 6 for Vancouver First. Press 7 for Coalition Vancouver. Press 8 if you're undecided.
Toronto-based Main Street published 3 polls last fall that incorrectly predicted Bill Smith would upset Calgary Mayor Naheed Nenshi. What do you think? Email bob@thebreaker.news. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.news podcast. There are now 6 weeks left until the October 20th Vancouver civic election. Patrick Condon was supposed to run for mayor with Cope, but that all changed suddenly in July when he suffered a stroke. Condon took medical advice and decided to drop out of the race. But we are glad to report that Condon, who is a professor of urban design at the University of British Columbia, is on the mend. He does remain involved, lending a hand to council candidates Gene Swanson, Ann Roberts, and Derek O'Keefe. And Patrick Condon is the guest on this week's edition of the Breaker.news podcast to talk about the high cost of housing and the high cost of transportation in Vancouver. It's a timely conversation after Prime Minister Justin Trudeau came to the West Coast to reannounce the $1.65 billion Surrey LRT and the nearly $3 billion Broadway SkyTrain subway.
Well, I'm feeling better. No secret. I had a stroke. Came as quite a surprise. And I was a month in the hospital. Fortunately for me, compared to some of the other people on the floor that I was on who also had strokes, mine wasn't as bad as some of theirs. Didn't affect my vision or my speech. My cognitive facilities are okay. I got some numbness in the left side. Couldn't walk for a while, but I can walk haltingly now. I feel fortunate that I recovered to the extent that I have, but I feel bad I'm not able to run for the office of mayor, which I had my heart set on.
Everyone wishes you well in your recovery, and of course, health has to take precedence over work, over politics, but you have vowed to keep your voice active during the campaign, as well as to support Cope candidates Gene Swanson, Ann Roberts, and Derek O'Keefe for city council. Now, housing is a major issue. It is the major issue. It may be the overwhelming issue. It's a major influence in the campaign. Still remains the pro-development forces, the real estate and construction industries, who still are connected to Vision Vancouver and the NPA despite the campaign finance changes. They say that really building housing is the only solution to this housing crisis, more supply. But it's not that simple. Can you explain why?
Well, up until 5 years ago, I was also very much of a mind that we really needed to open up our neighborhoods throughout the city for more supply. Unfortunately, I and others have realized over the past few years that adding more supply hasn't really done anything to mitigate prices. In fact, the increase in supply in the city of Vancouver has exceeded population growth. A lot of that supply is going to very high-end people, and that high-end is often more interested in housing as an investment commodity rather than as a place to live. And a lot of the investors are from places, I call it global capital rather than foreign capital, because some of that capital is Canadian investors as well. A lot of that money that's flowing into our real estate is coming from Canadians, but also from other parts of the world. So what we have now is a housing market which is by some measures the worst in the world in terms of being unaffordable by people who live and work here, whose salaries they depend on to pay for their housing as well as everything else. And people who live and work here are unable to purchase unless they bought 15 years ago or unless they have very generous mom and dad, what I call the bank of mom and dad, to help them out. So under these circumstances, I don't see that the market is going to fix the problem. I say the market is completely broken, and therefore we need a non-market to come in to supply our working families with places to live.
It's not just easy enough to just put new houses where people want to put them. There are so many other factors at play.
Well, that's true. Additional new supply also requires upgrading of infrastructures and sewers and water systems, electrical, repaving roads and so forth, additional transit. So it comes with a cost all the time. Our development cost levy, which is a tax on new development, as well as our community amenity contribution, are supposed to cover that. And some argue that it does. Others argue that it doesn't actually cover those costs. I argue that it doesn't cover those costs, probably. But more importantly, it doesn't cover the costs of additional housing for the people who need it. In the past few years, the Vision Council, in concert with the planning department, has started to use some of that CAC, community amenity contribution money, and DCL money for housing in modest amounts. They also have taken to forgiving CACs in exchange for some rental units. Sometimes those rental units are affordable, many times they're not. So there has been a shift towards housing in the past few years, but it's been a bit like rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic, I would say. Depending on the market, to supply just a few crumbs of housing for a few people is not going to solve the problem of Vancouver.
Another problem that Vancouver has is getting around Vancouver. Transportation has always been a big issue. Of course, this week we had the Prime Minister coming to the West Coast to re-announce the funding for TransLink to expand, first with the Surrey LRT, the Surrey Newton Guildford line. But of course, the Broadway subway is going ahead as well as a subway. And I know you've been very outspoken about that this is the wrong technology, the price is too high, and more could be done with less.
Yeah, what I often say is that, I'm not against the subway per se. If there was a subway ferry that could just wave a magic wand and put a subway on Broadway, and what the heck, let's put one on Main Street and Hastings. Why stop there if we could have it for nothing? But unfortunately, we can't have it for nothing. So to put over $2.8 billion into a subway that only goes 5 kilometers now is it amounts to the most expensive piece of infrastructure in Canadian history by some measures. And if we're going to spend that money there, we could have spent that money or less providing greenhouse gas zero transportation for the entire much of the region, certainly the entire city instead. But unfortunately, we're spending on 5 kilometers what we could have spent and probably should have spent on 200 or more kilometers if we'd had the wisdom to choose a different technology.
And the technology that would be more attainable would be something more like what Surrey is going to get, light rail transit, a tram system. In many parts of Vancouver, there are already routes, some left over from the old days and some built to purpose for a tram system.
The way it was originally laid out, there was a streetcar line within a 5-minute walk of everybody. And of course, on your way to the streetcar, you could stop and get groceries or a pack of cigarettes or whatever else, drop the kids off at school. We have a very, very walkable city, which is the legacy of the genesis that was essentially provoked by the way the streetcar operated. So it strikes me as additional foolhardy that we are ignoring that original pattern when we could capitalize on that pattern by investing not just in one overdeveloped corridor, the Broadway corridor, which is certainly going to have nothing but a forest of towers at every single subway station in order to make it pay for itself. Instead of that, to spread that wealth out into existing neighborhoods that certainly could use the transit and could be great places for our families to live in future generations. We've chosen a different and wrong direction. And what I find particularly maddening, Bob, is that every time we hear about this, it costs more money. The original cost was $3 billion to get it all the way to UBC. Then they said, well, it's going to cost $2 billion just to get to Arbutus. Sorry about that. And then they say, well, sorry about that. It's $2.8 billion now. We've had to readjust our figures. And just the announcement yesterday, which hasn't gotten very much attention in the press, is that they've changed the formula such that previously the region was going to have to pay 20% of the cost yesterday's press reports and press releases coming out of TransLink and the different branches of government have said that it's not going to cost 20% anymore. It's going to be 28%, and it's going to be paid by the cities of Surrey and Vancouver, respectively, for their different lines. So the dust is not settled on that, but that's very disconcerting. I think the voters in this election ought to realize that a shift from 20 to 28% is probably in the magnitude of over $100 million of sudden new taxes that are going to have to be levied against Vancouver citizens in some way, shape, or form. So I'm extremely distressed at the level of inattention that the local media and local politicians have focused on this out-of-control cost increases of this system.
And then you know, Vision Vancouver, an opponent to COPE, announced this week, Ian Campbell makes his major platform announcement that he's going to focus on getting it extended from Arbutus to UBC. It's almost a day late, dollar short, although maybe not a dollar short, another $3 billion in the hole if they ever can make this happen.
It's probably between, depending on what decade that extension goes through, the first phase won't be finished until somewhere in the later part of the 2020s. So we're talking about 2030, 2040 or something like that for anything that happens after that, long after we're all dead. But the cost of that is certainly going to elevate. And in cost in dollars, it will probably end up being, given the inflation and the cost of concrete and steel, which is twice as much as the rate of ordinary inflation, probably in the range of, at the very least, $3 billion, but it's probably going to be closer to $5 billion. So then the total cost might be $7 billion for the entire line. I've done some quick calculations. If your concern is about students getting back and forth to UBC, forget just students, even faculty and staff. If your concern is for that 50 to 60,000 people who are going in and out of that every day, why don't you just buy them a house? You could do it for $2 billion less. Give them a house for free if that's your concern. It makes no sense at all.
That was my interview with Patrick Condon of COPE, the professor of urban design at the University of British Columbia. Condon is the author of 7 Rules for Sustainable Cities, published in 2010 by Island Press. And you can find out more about COPE and its platform and its candidates at cope.bc.ca. Every week, we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to a deserving person or group that has made a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to teachers, school sports coaches, janitors, all the people that keep schools in British Columbia open and running every day to help the future leaders of the province learn. The first week of school has come and gone, but it's always a good time to say thank you. So instead of a virtual apple, how about a virtual Nanaimo bar for you all? You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Well, that's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of September 9th, 2018. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on September 9th in 1979, the Vancouver Whitecaps returned home after winning the North American Soccer League's Soccer Bowl Championship 2-1 over the Tampa Bay Rowdies at Giants Stadium in New Jersey on September the 8th?
It's all over. The Vancouver Whitecaps are the new champions of the North American Soccer League, and they earned it every step of the way, all season long and through the playoffs, maintaining their poise. There's Coach Tony Waiters, who's done a magnificent job in the past 2 years. He came over near the end of the 1977 season, turned the team around immediately from a losing record, and has had them going ever since.
Some 100,000 people greeted the Whitecaps from Vancouver International Airport all the way downtown to Robson Square, where politicians like Vancouver Mayor Jack Vollrich promised to build the team a new stadium. Well, now you know. Send me your feedback, send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. Thanks to some of our supporters like Quan Lee, Randy Sogstad, James Plett, Spruce Hill Contracting, Daryl Greer, Barbara May, Elvio Chiez, John Kennedy, and Dave and Burnaby. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.